Americans gave more than $373 billion to charity last year.
What role does faith play in that giving? Good morning. This is Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Kyle Reese, senior pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church and board member of One Jacks.
And I'm Nancy Bronner, executive director of One Jacks, an institute of the University of North Florida. Faith Matters is WJCT's quarterly program, taking a closer look at today's issues through the lens of faith.
A recent study published in the Chronicle of Philanthropy shows that religious Americans give more to charity than non-religious people. It also showed that the more important religion is to a person, the more likely that person is to give to a charity of any kind.
Today, we're bringing together voices from a variety of faiths and perspectives to talk about the influence of faith on philanthropy.
Here to begin our conversation are Nina Waters, president of the Community Foundation. Good morning, Nina.
Good morning.
And joining us by phone, Gary Chartran, executive chairman of Acosta Sales and Marketing. Good morning, Gary. You can join our conversation this morning by calling 549-2937. We want to hear your views.
Later in today's program, we'll hear different perspectives on this issue of faithful generosity from Jacksonville faith leaders. First, let's talk with Gary Chartran. Good morning, Gary. You've been generous in your philanthropy to many causes here on the First Coast, and you are also a member of the Catholic faith. Can you talk about some ways your faith informs your giving?
Yeah, sure, Nancy. I do believe in the tenets of the Catholic faith and try to be a good Catholic, attend church weekly, and pray often. And, you know, we believe in the dignity of the human person. And I think we're all called, rich or poor, to do what we can to improve society and to improve our community through alleviating pain and suffering in the community. And I think that that does come and is reinforced from the spirit and from your heart and from the faith that you have.
Well, you've certainly proved that in your lifestyle. And I'd like to ask you to apply that faith to guide you in your, how does that apply to your decisions on what you say yes and no to? How do you make that determination based on your faith?
Well, based on what I just said, in improving society and the dignity of the human person and trying to alleviate pain and suffering, there are, you know, so many wonderful nonprofits in town that help the less fortunate. And so, you know, things like food security and feeding Northeast Florida or the homelessness situation through I.M. Salzbacher or Clara White. Health care is also a big issue for us, our family, and we have been supporters of both St. Vincent's and Baptist, and right now have a big initiative with our foundation going on with mental health and trying to make mental health specialists available, more available to children in school by embedding mental health specialists in schools. The other would be, a couple others would be prison reentry. We love what Kevin Gay does over at Operation New Hope. Mm-hmm. And of course, the one that I think we probably spend the most time on, both with not only our treasure, but with time and talent, is education. And so we've invested heavily in education because we believe that using your fullest potential as a human being in today's 21st century world, that you need to be well-educated. And so we want to try to give everybody an equal playing field, and for those that are less fortunate, especially, to try to make sure that they have a good education.
Thank you, Gary. Nina, the Community Foundation, a part of its mission is, and I quote, helps to connect donors with causes that matter to them. What part have you seen that a donor's faith plays in these discussions, and in what ways?
I think religion is an extremely important part of philanthropy. Philanthropy, the definition itself, is love of mankind. And I think that you can see where religion and philanthropy intersect in that way. Certainly, the beginning of philanthropy in America really was founded on religious beliefs and faith. The first tradition of philanthropy, the earliest, was really love thy neighbor, feed the hungry. And that's really how philanthropy began in the United States. All the other traditions have expanded from that belief. And so it's very rare that you have a donor where a cause does not fit within their religious beliefs. At the Community Foundation, as you said, we want donors to give to causes that matter to them. And so in those cases where they're very clear about specific charities that they don't want to support in perpetuity through an endowment or at this time, we can be clear about that with them. The other thing I want to be clear about with everyone is that the majority of religious giving happens directly from the donor to the house of worship. And that rarely comes through a community foundation because they have the donor has that relationship with the church. And so their giving to churches or synagogues or places of worship really happen pretty directly.
And we'll talk about this later in our hour, but have you seen a change or a shift as far as giving to causes or religious causes? I obviously work in a religious institution, and it seems to me that philanthropic giving is sort of changing, whereas the church used to be the primary vehicle by which people would give their income of 10% and then go outside of that. But it seems now that givers look at a variety of institutions and causes, including their house of worship. Have you seen any change in that?
We absolutely have. And so as our country becomes more secular, and it is, giving to religious institutions has gone down. Now, I will say that the good news is that giving to religious institutions nationally last year was still double any other group that received it. So 32% for religion, 14% for education. So it was more than double. So that's the good news. But it is going down as our society becomes more secular. So the challenge, I think, for places of worship is how do you get beyond weekly giving through through the collection plate, and how do you expand that to different forms of giving? The other thing that people don't realize is as we become more technologically savvy, a lot of this giving, loving thy neighbor, feeding the hungry, happens in crowdfunding campaigns. And so that's another source of competition. So the fact that religious institutions need to go beyond that weekly giving and look at plan giving as an example, look at annual pledges for people that aren't coming to church, and using social media as well to reach out to their parishioners.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT, and we're talking this morning about what role faith plays in philanthropy. How do your religious beliefs affect your charitable giving? Give us a call and join the conversation at 549-2937.
Let's go back now to Gary Chartrand. Gary, you have mentioned earlier about the passion that you and your family have for various social issues. You mentioned food security, homelessness, health care, prison reentry. You're probably best known, at least in this area, for your passionate support of education, and you mentioned that as one of the priorities of your family. Can you share with us how your faith led you to focus so strongly on education issues?
Yeah, I think when we sat down and discussed it as a family, that we said if we can invest in one thing that will really make a difference, that for the future. Things like homelessness and food security are really important to take care of people that are in dire straits, and there's sort of you're helping people get through life day to day. But for the future, we felt like education really was more important in trying to prepare people to be able to sustain themselves and be productive citizens by getting a good education and therefore, being employable and trying to make and making sure that they you can make a living wage and be a productive citizen. So it was more of a long-term strategy as opposed to just trying to make sure that we take care of the problem today. I think you need to do both, but education, I think most people would agree that if you get a high school diploma and you go on and get some kind of secondary education, that you're going to make a lot more money than those that just drop out of high school. So that's why we've invested so heavily in education. We think it levels the playing field for people and gives everybody the opportunity at the to live the great American dream.
Well, we certainly appreciate all you've done to support the children in Duval County, and thank you for that.
Nina, the 2012 giving profile for Jacksonville shows the people of Jacksonville to be very generous. From 2006 to 2012, charitable giving by Jacksonville residents increased by nearly 7%, which was the second highest increase by any city in the nation. In 2015, individuals donated $962 million to charitable organizations. What does that say about our community and what you see every day in your work?
One thing that a lot of people don't know is that Northeast Florida actually is the most generous community per capita in the state of Florida as far as giving goes. So we have people giving at a higher rate than any other part of our state. What we don't have here as much is we don't have as many givers. So if we could reach out to more givers, we would even have a higher rate of philanthropy. We have very, very refined nonprofits here that do a great job of reaching out. We have strong boards that do that as well. Also between 2007 and 2012, in 2012 we have had a lot of big events in Jacksonville. The Jaguars sold, which was a big philanthropic opportunity for our community. We also started to see people's assets increase after the economic downturn. And so when people give from assets as opposed to income, you see larger gifts. And so by 2012, the economy had improved significantly for that. We also had a couple of businesses sell, and usually when that happens, there's a large influx of philanthropic dollars in that year. We have very generous people in Northeast Florida, and I think those statistics really bear that out.
And let's go to the phones now and take a few calls. We are speaking now with Marshall in Orange Park. Go ahead, Marshall.
Yes, good morning. I appreciate you taking my call. I want to make a few comments, and they're going to be on the other side of the fence, so I want to say that up front. But I do appreciate Mr. Chartrand greatly. I know his heart. He is truly a good man. But that said, there are some things that I disagree vehemently with Mr. Chartrand on, and that is basically his perception that in some of the things he's doing a good work in accordance with the Catechism of the Catholic Church. That would be, as example, the 1992 U.S. Bishops edition. We need to do good as believers, and my little organization, that is a tiny little group, seeks to help mentally confused people on the streets, and we assist in the minority communities with some issues, certainly not on the scale that Mr. Chartrand does. But I would like to offer this, and I don't want to be more specific unless you wish that I do and challenge me on the point. There are some issues in which Mr. Chartrand is providing money and activity that are absolutely antithetical to the basic teachings of his church, specifically the Catholic Church, and Christianity, the body of Christ internationally. It's one thing to do something good and feel good about yourself, but we cannot declare it righteous. It has to be in accordance with God's specific scripture. And even though we want to heal the sick and feed the poor and do those good things, there are certain gender issues and family issues that Mr. Chartrand is underwriting that are absolutely, unequivocally counter to what scripture says.
Marshall, thank you so much for your question, and we'll go to Gary now and for a comment. Gary, were you able to hear the question from the caller?
You know, I got dropped and I called back in. So if you could just give recap quickly, I'll respond to it.
Yeah, Marshall was stating an appreciation for your giving and what you've done in this community, but was taking issue a bit with some of the causes that you support and didn't get specific as not a part of the Catholic faith tradition.
Right. Well, I believe in the dignity of the human person. And I believe that every person, and I suspect that he's probably talking about LGBT issues. And I don't believe in oppression of any kind. And it's not my job to judge, and nor is it his. You know, a few weeks ago, I tried to read the gospel every day, and Jesus was talking to his disciples and said to them, "Don't worry about the sliver in the other person's eye. Worry about the wooden beam that you have in your own eye." And I take issue with those that want to judge. That's not our job. That's God's job to judge. Our job is to love and to be inclusive and to make sure that we respect people and the dignity of a human person.
Thank you.
And so I believe very strongly in that.
Well, and I think that's just a very reflective on all of our faith communities, is that there is a great diversity in application of Scripture, whatever Scripture that might be. So thank you, Gary, for that. Now we're going to Dave on a phone in Nassau County. Dave, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. Good morning. I have a problem with the implication that there is somehow a connection between faith and virtue. I would like to know, when you talk about how supposedly religious people are more generous than secular people, when you're talking about the generosity, did you include donations to a church as a charitable giving process? Because if you eliminate giving to a church and instead actually giving to a secular charitable organization, that to me is more viable in terms of trying to provide a service to the community than merely trying to provide for the expenses of running a church.
Dave, thank you for your question. Nina.
This is a national study, so not one that we did here locally, and this is a national study, so I want to be clear about that. But the study actually included giving to religious organizations, giving to religious charities, were counted in. So if it's the Salvation Army, for example, then it would have been counted under health and human services organizations. So the 32% we talked about was actually giving to religious organizations. So that would be churches, synagogues, houses of worship.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. We're continuing this fascinating conversation with Nina Waters, president of the Community Foundation, and Gary Chartrand, executive chairman of Acosta Sales and Marketing. We invite you to join the conversation at 549-2937. Nina, you talked about this a little bit, but research does indicate that the influence of institutional faith on our lives is waning, and certainly that has to include charitable giving. How have you seen that play out on the First Coast?
I think that it plays out the same way that the transfer of wealth is playing out and generational philanthropy is playing out. So you see the millennials, the Gen Xers not being, you know, being more secular than their parents were. Also, we have to think about, a lot of people heard about the challenges people were facing when they were in church. Now it's all over the media. And so you can see what's happening in other countries. You can see the challenges. So giving also is going more internationally than it is domestically with younger generations. And so that affects the church as it affects local charities as well. And so I think finding ways for local houses of worship to find ways to connect with those next two generations, I think is going to be critically important as we move forward, to make sure that those institutions continue to be strong and be able to serve their congregations, but also that they can serve the community at large.
And it's, that seems to me to be the question. It falls upon faith communities, perhaps more so than ever, to talk about ways that their life influences the community and ways that giving to that institution influences the community and makes it a better place. Is that a fair assumption?
It is a fair assumption. And I think that that is happening. And I think that that is actually, as I said, that's how philanthropy began in our communities. It began with religious institutions being the philanthropic organizations. So I think it's critical that that congregations are able to continue to make that connection of how they make our community better, and they do in so many ways.
Gary, do you have a comment about what Nina just said about the trends in this area of giving?
Yeah, it's concerning. The statistics clearly state that if you attend church once a week, you give 3.5 times more than people that don't attend church once a week. And also with volunteerism, it's, I think, 2 times. And those are facts that have been stated. I do get concerned about it, not so much right now, but I think in the future, as people become more secular, I can get concerned about if those statistics hold up. That would make it concerning about future philanthropic giving.
Mm-hmm. We have another... go ahead, Gary. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that there's a great YouTube video by Clayton Christensen on religion and capitalism, and your viewers, if they have a chance to view that, I think he makes a lot of sense and talks about how we, over time, as Nina mentioned, at the founding of our country, we would go to religious institutions weekly and listen to people that we respected talk about the tenets of their religion, and therefore, we would do the right thing, not because of the law and not because of the police that were out there, but we did it because of what we learned about God. Mm-hmm. And he ends his talk with, if you take away religion, you can't hire enough police.
Yeah.
It's a great video.
Thank you for that. We'll share that with our viewers and listeners. We have a call from Susan in Mandarin. Susan, go ahead with your question.
Yes, I was wondering if the rise of the 527s and the massive amounts of money being contributed to those is hurting charitable contributions, especially in this city. There was $2 million contributed to the Yes for Jacksonville plan to increase the sales tax for our children. And I know Mr. Chartrand was one of the ones that contributed over $5,000 to that. And I just wonder if that kind of thing is hurting other charitable contributions. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much for the question. And Nina Waters, what do you say about this?
I can say that during election years, like the big election year this year, we do not see a decline necessarily in charitable giving based on election year giving. Donors, I think, have different objectives for giving to political campaigns than they have to giving to organizations. And I don't see that their giving to organizations necessarily changes as a result of that.
Well, I think, again, that speaks to it puts the burden of proof on the faith communities to talk through why are your philanthropic dollars making a difference in the community. And if a faith community cannot do that, there are many organizations out there that can point to the flow-through money that changes and makes a difference in people's
Absolutely.
Lives.
Nina Waters and Gary Chartrand, thank you so much for joining us this morning. You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Nancy Bronner, Executive Director of UNF's One Jacks Institute.
And I'm Kyle Reese, Board Member of One Jacks and Senior Pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church.
After a short break, we're going to continue our conversation about the role of faith in philanthropy with several faith leaders in our community. We'll be right back with more Faith Matters.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things for North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a $20 million payout to settle sex harassment allegations at Fox News and the abrupt departure of longtime host Greta Van Susteren. What ongoing turmoil at the network may mean for journalism, TV news, and the conservative agenda.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, the website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part two, sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back to Faith Matters, WJCT's quarterly program, exploring today's issues through the lens of faith. I'm Nancy Bronner.
And I'm Kyle Reese.
We're going to continue our discussion about faith and philanthropy now as we hear from faith leaders in our community. Joining us in the studio are Pastor Claire Chance of Avondale United Methodist Church. Good morning.
Good morning.
Imam Shamadeen of the Islamic Center of Northeast Florida. Good morning, Imam.
Good morning.
Father Nick Lowe of St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church. Good morning.
Good morning, Nancy.
And Rabbi Jonathan Lubliner, Senior Rabbi of the Jacksonville Jewish Center.
Good morning, Kyle and Nancy.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us.
Claire Chance, you have on your website of Avondale United Methodist Church that you practice extravagant generosity. Can you explain that concept?
Absolutely, Nancy. You know, a lot of people think that church giving is something that's an equation, a mathematical equation. And at Avondale, that's just not how we think about it. We think about it in terms of a heart condition, that as your heart grows closer to God, you start to see other people as being your brothers and sisters. And you'd help your brother and sister if they were having a problem, wouldn't you? It's sort of a healthy way of living. Instead of with your fists clenched and your hands crossed across your chest, it's living with your hands out, extravagantly giving of yourself in all kinds of ways. Yes, financially, but certainly giving of your time, giving of your prayers, giving of your heart to other people.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Claire. You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. We invite you to join our conversation at 549-2937. Father Nick Lowe, you and the good people of St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church are in the midst of a significant capital campaign that will result in a new location for your church and campus. Talk about ways that you've seen this initiative expand generosity in your congregation.
Thanks, Kyle. You know, it's interesting. When we first began this, some of the questions were the tithing or the stewardship going to be impacted by our fundraising for this capital campaign? And actually, what we've seen is actually the opposite, that as people buy into the vision that we feel that God has put in our church over the last 100 years, and especially recently in a new church property, we have seen the response has been people are willing to make that investment. They're willing to make that partnership. And by God's grace, we've been very clear with our people that whatever the gift is, we're not looking for amount. We just want their heart. We want their heart invested into what we see as an important part and an important legacy of doing Christ's work in this church, in the city.
Imam Shamadeen, there is an incredible story that most people in Jacksonville don't know much about. A group of physicians in your congregation raised a large amount of money in a short amount of time to begin the Muslim American Social Services Free Care Clinic. Can you tell us more about that story and about how the giving was directly tied to their faith?
Yes. So this was not the start of the MASS, Muslim American Social Services. We raised that money last year in 2015, but MASS has been started since 2010, where we have approximately 46 physicians who volunteer their times to help thousands of people. The money that was raised last year was to build a building to make it exclusively for this these services provided. We raised approximately $340,000, but the money that was raised was not only from the physicians, but from the entire Islamic community.
And that clinic continues to see patients from all over the First Coast.
Absolutely, yes. So we have no geographic boundaries. Anyone who comes to Mass, regardless of where they're from, as long as they're in need and we have the ability to help them, we attempt to help them to the best of our ability. And we have lots of medical services in many different fields, physical therapy, orthopedics, general surgery, gynecology, and much more. And we have other than medical services also. We have a food pantry, and we're trying to expand in other areas also.
Thank you. You can join our conversation here on Faith Matters as we discuss the role of faith in philanthropy. Give us a call at 549-2937. Next, Rabbi Lubliner, in the Jewish tradition, there are eight levels of charity, a concept called Maimonides' Ladder. Talk about how that concept of charity and philanthropy plays out in contemporary Judaism.
Well, Maimonides, who was a medieval philosopher, came up with this notion of different rungs that have nothing to do with how much one gives and more with the spirit in which one gives. I think it was Walt Whitman who once wrote, "The gift is most to the giver and comes back most to him." And that's probably how contemporary donors look at the act of giving. It makes them feel good, and that's something beautiful. Indeed, in Latin, charity comes from caritas, meaning love. In the Jewish tradition, the Hebrew word for philanthropy is tzedakah, which comes from the word tzedek, meaning justice. So it's a requirement beyond what one feels and whether one derives pleasure, though clearly the pleasure that comes with doing good is something that's very, very laudable. Maimonides' ladder focuses on not so much the feeling of the giver, but the person who is on the receiving end and how his or her dignity is preserved in the giving process. So the highest level on the ladder is to allow a person self-sufficiency. If you train someone for a job, if you give someone a loan that they pay back that enables them to be self-sufficient, then you have not only helped them, but you have also helped them maintain their self-respect. And anonymous giving, people who don't feel beholden or somehow awkward in the presence of the donor, are a little bit down on the ladder. But the idea is that the giving should be done in a way that the person is able to preserve his own self-respect and integrity. And that's very important.
Thank you. You are all religious professionals. You are dependent on the generosity of your congregations to fund your salary. And I'm going to ask Kyle, is there tension in this relationship between faith leader and congregation when you're dealing with this sensitive topic?
For me, I would say there's always a tension there, because when you ask your congregation to give and to give generously, it, everyone in the room knows that that is a way that you make your living. So there is a tension there. If you look at Christian New Testament, there seems to, it speaks with two voices. Paul seems to indicate it would be better if money from outside funded my ministry so I can just be who I am and not be dependent. But we know even the disciples and Jesus were in a culture of sponsorship that folks gave generously so they could do what they wanted to do. So there is a tension there. The way I try to deal with that first and foremost is to make sure that I'm as generous a giver as I can be. So I'm speaking not just to the congregation, but I'm speaking to myself as well. But I know my colleagues here feel that same tension. Father Nick.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the struggles that we do face, and it's interesting, in Greece right now, the government actually provides a salary for their clergy so that the local churches aren't really required to pay a salary. That may be changing, though, now in light of the recent crisis there. But what's interesting, I think, in our church family is, and I've been very fortunate that Saint on the Divine is a church that I grew up in. So these people have known me since I was a little kid, probably causing problems in the Sunday school classrooms. And so I haven't really dealt with that issue one-on-one, but I definitely agree with Kyle, because I think when people see that you're as invested as you're asking them to be invested into the community, that you're partnering up, that people's notion of wanting to give and to assist the priest and the pastor of the church definitely increases and definitely is better.
Claire.
Pastor Claire?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't tense about this at all until you brought it up.
Sorry.
But now, in view of the fact that probably some of my congregation are listening, y'all, I'm really tense about it, okay? The truth is this, in our faith, and I think this is probably true in all of our faiths, we believe that people are gifted differently. We're wired differently. We respond differently. And pretty much everybody in my congregation is glad that it's me in the pulpit and not them. And therefore, they don't begrudge me that I need to make a living too. They also look to me to be giving in lots of ways, not just financially, but at right. the bedside when they're sick or mm-hmm. when they have a fear or a concern that I'm going to be there for them. Authenticity is the antidote to that kind of tension.
Imam, and Claire brings up a wonderful conversation that I think covers all of our faith traditions, and that is the giving not only of resources and financial resources, but also the giving of time.
Giving of yourself. Yeah.
How does that play out at the mosque?
So for myself, I never felt that feeling from the community. Our community is very, very generous. In most Islamic countries, the imams are paid by either by the government or some large organization. But here in America, it's private individuals who finance it. And it's very transparent. So until you asked that question, I actually never thought of it also. And I never felt that.
I don't
it's very
to
transparent.
Stir up trouble here.
Yeah, and also, I give back a lot to the community. Mm-hmm. So people may be giving from their money. But personally, for myself, I give a lot of my time, not only as part of the work, but I go beyond that. I actually do sincerely care for the congregation, not only for the Muslims, I care for the non-Muslims in Jacksonville also. And our community is big on this. So really, because I give back, and I really think I give value for whatever I take, perhaps more than I take, I don't feel like that. And fortunately, my congregation don't ever make me feel like that.
Okay, so maybe it's the Baptist in the room that feels that way. Rabbi Lublinger.
Well, it's an interesting point. In a smaller congregation where the pastor, the rabbi, may actually be the largest budget item, mm-hmm. I think you're likely to feel that more, having served both a small congregation and a considerably larger congregation. There is a different feel when you're working with a full staff. It's interesting, though. I was smiling because in Jewish law, there's a beautiful legal fiction that is employed in the payment of a rabbi. You can't pay an individual to study or to perform God's commandments, because as the sage Hillel from 2,000 years ago once said, you shouldn't use Torah as a spade with which to dig. So the legal fiction is my congregation doesn't pay me to be a rabbi, doesn't pay me to preach and to teach. They pay me unemployment compensation because I'm so busy with them, I don't have time to have a job. So.
So we'll go to the phones right now. We have a caller, Tom from the West Side. Tom, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to mention that in addition to giving of finances and giving of time, the Christian and faith community in general also gives of the generosity of the Spirit. I know in my faith that we look at the world as, you know, the brotherhood of man, and we're concerned about the condition of all men around us, all men and women. And that leads us to look beyond our narrow special interests and see what eyes of acceptance. And that makes us more uniting, dividing. And I think that's very important.
Thank you, Tom. Father Nick.
I mean, I think I would totally agree with what you're sharing, because I think within the Christian tradition, you know, Jesus shares with us that when you do to the least, you're doing it to him. And so one thing that we oftentimes preach in our messages on Sunday mornings is when you do it to them, you're doing it for him. And so in our work and in our ministry, that just like Jesus didn't have inner circles of people that he only just ministered to, people that looked like him, that worshiped like him, that prayed like him. But, you know, in our tradition, or the Christian tradition, is that Jesus went outside of his inner circle and made the world itself it's his inner circle. And so that's one of the things that we try to make sure that when we approach philanthropy and when we approach our giving, that it's not only just looking at ways that we can better our local church or the people within the four walls, but actually that the world itself becomes the four walls of our church.
Yeah. Pastor Claire.
You know, I think that all four of us who are in this room, the religious professionals, are representing cultures that want to serve our neighbors. And in the Christian tradition, the neighbor is defined as the other, the one who would be ostracized. The Good Samaritan was a hated individual in the idea of the ethnicity of the Samaritan. And yet, the Good Samaritan is the good one in the story. The priest is not the good one. The rich person is not the good one. It is the poor Samaritan who helps another person. And so we're called, it's not about our money. It's never about our money. It's about our hearts and how much we can give to make the community a better place. And that means when we say all people deserve dignity, as the rabbi said, all people deserve medical care, as the imam said, all means all. And the one who you may fear the most may deserve your help the most.
Thank you. Imam, you have talked about ways that the mosque is making Jacksonville a better place by providing health care for those who may or may not have access. When you talk about the responsibility of what your community of faith bears for the community, how do you talk about that in Islam?
We talk about it from a faith basis, is that as being a Muslim, generosity is part of our faith. And it stems from our compassion. And we're taught to care for all people. In fact, we're taught to care for the entire creation, not only people, but even for the animals and for the planet that we live on. We're taught that if it is you want God to be compassionate to you, you need to show compassion to his creation. Another great motivation for the Muslims here in Jacksonville and throughout the country and in the world is that we've been very blessed. We have a lot of highly paid professional, very wealthy people here in Jacksonville, and they feel like they have harvested a lot of good from coming to America in their various professions, and they want to give back. You find in mass especially, that's the sentiment of the average doctor, that they want to give back to society because they took a lot. In fact, this is one of the foundations of what we call zakah. Zakah, we see it as the wealthy giving back to the poor because the wealthy got their wealth from the poor. So therefore, they give back and share that. So it's a cycle.
Thank you, Imam. You're listening to Faith Matters. We're talking this morning with Pastor Claire Chance of Avondale United Methodist Church, Imam Shamadeen of the Islamic Center of Northeast Florida, Father Nick Lowe of St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church, and Rabbi Jonathan Lubliner, senior rabbi of the Jacksonville Jewish Center, and we want to add your voice to the conversation. Give us a call at 549-2937.
Rabbi, the Hebrew scripture instructs the people to seek the welfare of the city in which they find themselves. Talk about ways that your faith community not only serves its members per se, but tries to make a difference in the community of Jacksonville at large.
You know, I haven't done the same kind of research as the Chronicle of Philanthropy, but anecdotally, my own experience is that our parishioners, our congregants who are most involved with supporting the synagogue are also very involved with a variety of not-for-profit causes around Jacksonville and beyond. In our congregation, whether it's volunteering for the Sulzbacher Center, which we do regularly, participating in eye care and community organizing. We work with refugee resettlement. We've done a variety of projects through our day school, our parochial school, with Second Harvest, Feed a Needy Neighbor. There is just an intertwining of what we do outside of our building and inside our building, and one naturally blends into the other. So I think there is something to be said. There was a caller from Nassau County about, is this just parochial in the most narrow sense? You're giving to help your own institution. And I think not, because the majority of our most committed members, whether that is philanthropic or those who give of their time, are also very connected outside as well, and see that as part of a continuum of their commitment to faith.
Many of us have grown up in a faith in our faith tradition, and we talk about the concept of the tithe, and that in my experience anyway is changing a bit. Former generations would have said more than likely 10% goes to the church, and then on top of that, I give to causes in the community. I find personally that that's changing a bit, that younger generations look at all of the causes that they want to support, including the church, and then have to decide how they give their philanthropic dollars. Do you see that in your congregations? And if so, how do you talk about your mission and giving to your congregation?
Well, I think, I couldn't agree with you more, Kyle, because I think with this vast array of information that all of us have access to now, the world is becoming so global that as a result, through social media and other facets, our churches are becoming global churches. I mean, many churches have their own Facebook pages and are on social media accounts. And so we're having total access to what even a few years ago we would not have had access to dealing with issues such as the crisis of the refugees leaving the Middle East, with earthquakes and other devastating impacts that we've had on the world, that have been on impacted areas of the world, as well as even things domestically with the recent rains in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I think in my church family, I think what's interesting is that because our church is a global church anyway, that you're seeing that people's gifts are not in addition to their local church, to the local community, that we're seeing are also a need for us to also, as a church, in addition to as individuals, but as a church, that we're looking at how we can impact not only our local city, but how we as a church impact areas of concern throughout the world.
Pastor Claire.
I think what you're hearing from all of us is that there's a mingling going on, that the walls are dropping, and that our congregational work, while worship is so important to us and we refuel our fires coming into worship every week, the point of our faith is in the community itself. The walls of the church are dropping. The walls of the synagogue and the mosque are dropping, and we are us. As a result, the giving of the church to the community has changed. It's not just the giving of the individual, as you were saying. It's the giving of the church as well, I think, because now our congregations often lead us in where we are going to do something next. The ministries of my church, for instance, are often grass fed. They're coming up from the roots of the congregation itself. The person who loves rescuing dogs has led our Vacation Bible School to include pets and the care of your pets in ways that the imam was talking about. We're responsible for the whole world. A person whose heart is with the homeless has been leading a manna bag ministry where we give out bags to people who are on the street that include really practical things that help them get through a night. Those sorts of things that are led by the grassroots organization of the congregation. I think the money part of it, the tithing, we so rarely even think about it in terms of a formula anymore. Now we talk about giving our whole lives to the work of God, whether it's in the workplace, in the family, or in the community.
And I think that begs the question for you all, just as individuals have to decide where to invest their dollars and their energy, so do congregations have to decide. Rabbi Lubliner, how do you make that decision as far as your congregation and what you will seek to address in the community?
Well, it's, you know, as a piggyback to what I said earlier, there is a balance. You know, love your neighbor as yourself implies that you have to love yourself as well. And we're keenly aware we have a day school, we have a day camp. These are very expensive undertakings. And we want people, as part of their larger philanthropic outlook, to support things in the community. We're all part of that community. But we also need to have people, if we look at the synagogue or the church as a family, there are certain needs that have to be taken care of at home. And so one of our concerns, being a small minority of in the larger population, is will our next generation, because philanthropy, like many other metrics, is a measure of a relationship. And will those, we want people to be involved at Sulzbach. We want people to be involved with all kinds of philanthropic causes and cultural causes across the First Coast that enrich our lives in all kinds of intangible ways, but not at the expense of having that relationship that connects them. We would love the synagogue to be a gateway to a larger world, but that they also feel that they have roots within the congregation, because if we don't have that support beginning at home, we can't expect the larger community to support the individual synagogue, church, or mosque.
Thank you so much, and we so appreciate the four of you joining us this morning to share your views, and we thank Pastor Claire Chance, Imam Shamadine, Rabbi Lubliner, and Father Nick Lowe. Thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening this morning. We hope this discussion has expanded your understanding of faith and philanthropy in Jacksonville. We're committed to bringing you diverse opinions and perspectives on matters of faith, and we'll be returning each quarter with new voices to add to these conversations.
This show's producer is Karen Fagans. If you missed any of today's program, you can find the podcast later today on wjctnews.org. I'm Kyle Reese, senior pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church and board member of One Jacks.
And I'm Nancy Bronner, executive director of One Jacks. This has been Faith Matters. Thanks for listening.